I am Dale Kneeper. It is Tuesday, July 18th, 2000, and I am in the living room at the Havre Grace home of Mr. Boyer Forsyth, a Harford County living treasure, who will describe some major events in his life and in Harford County, Maryland. Mr. Forsyth, where and when were you born?
February the 10th, 1907, in Havre de Grace. I was born in the room of this house, right up here, it's a front bedroom. The same room as I'm living in, I'm sleeping in now. How's that?
And so this house belonged to your parents then?
Yes, they had it built. At that time, my father was working here in Havre de Grace when they were building the Susquehanna Bridge at that time. He worked on it at the time, and then he had just had the high school. And I already told you that the Magna Brothers course.
So you have lived in it since?
It was rented at that time. It was rented at that time. But this other side, while we were living here, the rent was $8 a month. And it stayed that way for quite a while before we left. I had five brothers. I was the sixth, and my sister next door was the daughter, Dorothy, and she was the only girl of the family. And we lived here for quite a while and went to the other side for different ones. At that time, money was very scarce. The value of property was low. And up this year where we were, we had Oyster Shell Road that year. And on the walkways was cinder. We never had concrete, it wasn't about that time. We had cinder road, didn't have pavement, but cinder in the walkways. I can remember they used to shore it up each side. I see a lot of people that burned coal at that time, and when the cinders were burned, they picked them up like they did the garbage, and they'd make walks, sitting on it, make walks where you could walk. It was better than no walks at all, but no concrete walks at all, except down on the main, we called it the main drag down on the front street. There was a few blocks of concrete. They done it whenever they got enough money to do that type of work. But we never got it for a long time up here. In fact, we only had one pipeline running into this house, and the water was at the kitchen sink. That's where we got our water. And we turned it off every night to keep it from freezing. And then let the stoves go away. We didn't have any heat except the stoves, and we burnt a lot of wood. A lot of woods were up there. We went and cut the trees down and brought them in, and I said, nobody bothered with me. They wanted to get them cleared anyhow. Some of my father and some of my other brothers, we'd come out either after school or weekends or whatever. We'd cut down the trees and saw them up and bring them in, kitchen stove was going all the time with that many children, and burned a lot of wood. And then the cinders and everything, all you had to do was put it out on the walkway.
Very good. You've been in Havre de Grace pretty much all your life then?
Yes, just practically all my life. I was away three different times. When I got married, I married Hilda Gibson. She was a native of Havre de Grace also. And I was working on the Pennsylvania Railroad at that time as a brakeman. And we moved to Baltimore. I lived in Baltimore 2.5 years. And wasn't long before the Depression came on, you couldn't get a job anywhere, so I was laid off. And we were laid off, couldn't get any work for quite a long time. And after in, I think it was around the 1931, I got a temporary job at Prairie Point as an assistant gardener. Well, what it was just a job. He didn't give it a category. And I was only ordered a little over a year, and this man that was the gardener, he was transferred to North Chicago, Illinois. And he and his wife kept me, myself and my wife. He said, if we go with him, we get him a job just as soon as you got there as assistant gardener. So we went. There was a job. We couldn't get anything here. So we went out there, and in fact, we rented the house. We had the upstairs, they had the downstairs. And we stayed there only 7 months. My wife got homesick and pregnant, and we came back to Barron. And we got back to Barron, it was just the same thing as when we left here at Happy Grace. She couldn't get a job. So my wife, Hilda, had a sister and a brother-in-law, and her name was Weaver. And he was working in Philadelphia. So we decided to go up there and look around and see if we could get it. I couldn't get something to do up there. And it did. We got a job. I worked in Watermaker's store at nighttime, 12 hours a day. We worked Saturdays, but we didn't work Sundays. And it wasn't a bad job at all. And it was something, and I worked in that almost a year. And they started to lay people off, and I was temporary. And I was one of the ones that gave off, we had laid off. And we came back to Happy Grace. And that's the only time I've worked or been away from Happy Grace, not even at the time.
Very good. Well, in the time that you have been here, which has been a lot, can you describe, like, when you were growing up, what was Havre Grace like then compared to how it is today?
I tell you, it wasn't much. Havre Grace did have, well, they had a canning house, Stockholm's canning house, but they put up prairie during the summer, and they had that to make pork and beans for the American Store Company. So they worked year-round, but they were only paid 15 cents an hour. And so if you didn't get a job, you worked there, there's nothing. That's where my wife worked. She worked there for quite a long time. And nothing much else around where there were any jobs. And sometimes you get a little bit when the racetrack was open, and it was in the spring and the fall, and you could go get a little bit during those times. We were young, I was told especially, we used to sell sandwiches out there, and mother would make them, and we'd go out there and sell the sandwiches for 10 cents a piece. And if you'd done that, you could make some money on it. And I went to my mother because they were always short of money.
Well, what'd you do for recreation? Did you have any, you know, kind of fun things did you do?
I didn't have much recreation. I went to Harvard Grace School, finished the 8th grade, and I was working down the Stockholms, like I just spoke of, and I didn't go back to the 9th grade. That's as far as I went. And then I just worked from then on. Never, whatever could get a job, I worked and the pay and everything was very low, because they were bad times. Wasn't hardly anything, and when you did get something, the pay was so low, it wasn't much. I done that until I went on the railroad. I worked by, like I said, the out of Baltimore, and I was on the railroad about 2.5 years. And they paid well, and that was all right, because they had a staggered wage. I think it was 80 cents an hour at that time, and that was good. I was making more than my father was. And my older brother, we wouldn't have worked on the railroad because there wasn't nothing else much. My two older brothers, or three older brothers, worked on the railroad, off the building, whatever they could.
And you said your dad helped to build the bridge across the Susquehanna. Well, did he have different occupations, or?
He was a carpenter, but he wasn't what they called a finished carpenter. He was on, I guess you'd call it, big things like bridges and tunnels or everything like that. He worked away from there also. What he did, it was up in New York, or I think he worked in Philadelphia on one bridge and tunnels and stuff like that. And my father wasn't a very good provider for his wife or children. I don't mind saying it, because he was not a good father to her, my husband, to my mother, or us children. So we had to work to help keep the place going. That's one reason. But when I didn't work didn't go to school any longer than the 8th grade.
Right.
I dropped out to help my mother.
Right.
The
so you didn't have to worry about what your free time was going to be, it was just going to be work. That's what you basically did.
We never had much free time. We had children, we had to still had to get wood to burn in there, to cut down trees, right, and saw them up. Once in a while we'd go to the movies.
When you went to the movies, were they the silent pictures, or?
Yeah. No, they were, they were, first they were silent pictures, then it got so they talked some, and I think it was 5 cents we used to go on Sunday afternoon, and sometimes way back when I was younger than that, we saved tin cans at that time. They used them over again. And mother used to save tin cans for me. Took two tin cans and the lids and 2 cents, you could go to the movie.
How about that?
So that was our belief. My mother was a Baptist. She went to Baptist church, and so said all of us. We went to church every Sunday, either Sunday school or church or both. So we got older, and then we went on our different ways.
So
my mother was a very religious woman.
Were there like church picnics and things like that that you might go to?
Yeah, they did have church picnics.
Socials and that sort of
thing. Once a year.
Now you mentioned that you went to Havre de Grace School.
Yeah.
Okay. How was school different when you went to school as you see school today? Can you see any comparisons?
Well, as far as I know, I didn't get to go much later than like the rest of the children did. They were very strict, and you had to learn, and you had to be good. They didn't put up with anything. The principal or the teachers. But the teaching then was that you got it, or you had to stay and go another year to make it to the next grade. And that's the way it was through all the grades I went to. I never had a brother graduated till the one next to me, and he graduated, but he's a Baptist minister, because the mother, he got it for her. And so he went to the Southern Baptist Seminary down in North Carolina. He went out through with it all the whole time. He was a good preacher. And the rest of them, my sister, graduated, and my youngest brother, Frank. They're the two. The rest of us just had to stop work and make money to help with the family.
Where was your school located when you went to it?
Right after where it is now.
Same place?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how did you get there?
Well,
How far would you say that is from here?
Well, it's not a mile. I'd say it's a little over half a mile. And lots of times, especially in winter, we just take a lunch and you'd get out, that would be it. You had to walk. Otherwise, you'd walk both ways. Morning, noon, and then you come to get, when you get done, it went to 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
So you had a long day, didn't you?
Yeah, you come home and go to work. We didn't care about that.
Can you describe the roads? You did a little bit. You said most of them weren't paved. They were cinders and all that sort of thing. Do you remember when what the first major road was that you saw here in Havre de Grace?
Well, you see it. Havre de Grace didn't have hardly any money to put in roads. And they had horse and buggies in those days. There were no cars, not a lot. And they were down what we call the front street, the main places down where the stores were. I'll tell you one thing about Havre de Grace in those days. On almost every corner was a store, mostly grocery stores, but some other kind. And you didn't have to walk for it, or you had to have his money. We had a store over here on Ontario Street, and one down next, right down one block, two blocks on Otsego Street, and over on Erie Street there was all kinds of stores. See, there used to be the canal that run to Wrightsville. I never been to Wrightsville, but that's as far as it went. And they took things up and brought coal back or whatever, and it went on and on, and a lot of people just stayed here. And down along the river, along lower Erie Street and Water Street, there were small hotels, and people would room in those and work on the canal. They'd go up one day and come back the next. And there was quite a few of them in that area. There wasn't nothing much up around here except the little grocery stores. And most of it was a book. You either paid it by the week or the month. But very little was cash, because it was. Well, my father and father, when he'd come home, he'd leave the money and he'd go off for whatever it was. Unless we'd done it. We'd done it most of the time. Us boys. So we grew a lot of stuff. We lived right here. We always had a garden. Everything. Then we, like I was saying, was working in the garden when you come over from school. Because there wouldn't be any weeds in the garden where you got it from your father.
When you decided to work, I know you said you had worked as a brakeman for the railroad. Mm-hmm. What were some of the other jobs that you had?
I worked out of Baltimore from Baltimore to Harrisburg. I was temporary, and at first they put me out of Perryville, then they sent me down to Baltimore. That's when we moved down there, my wife and I. At times you took a run maybe to New Jersey, from Baltimore to New Jersey. It's a temporary job. They should put you anywhere they will send you. Philadelphia and New Jersey and up to Harrisburg, and lots of times you would think you were doing real good, you get laid off, and you couldn't get anything else, but then maybe later on, a couple months or so, they call you back. But that's after death, when the real, when the real depression hit, when there's nothing to do, well, they the railroad too. They didn't, we couldn't get any work. So.
Well, you mentioned too you had gone to Chicago and worked there for a while.
Well, I wasn't on the railroad then.
No, you had a different job at that
point. I got the assistant, they call him assistant gardener.
Can you tell us a little bit about
that? Nothing but a couple of them, both. But this guy was told me he could get me a job. And I worked there for, we came back, and of course I went to Philadelphia and worked up there. But I, after all this going around, like, that's the only time I worked away from home, and finally, along different people, I think it was around 32, I picked up the paint. I put some paint on a person's house, like doing a kitchen, or maybe painting the outside, or whatever, and I stuck with it, and I wound up being a painter contractor. And that's where I made my living until I retired.
How many years did you do that?
Well, it was, practically all of my life. Even after I retired, when I was 62, I still, I had two guys that were with me, and we painted around Havre Grace and Aberdeen, Old Porter, or whatever. And I stuck to that for the rest of my life. That's what it was, contract painter. Finally. Done pretty good at it. Self-learned. Nobody taught me how. And I was a paper holder, too. I held paper. Mostly around Havre Grace and Aberdeen.
Well, that's interesting. Do you remember when Route 40 was built?
Oh, yeah.
What do you have any recollections of anything related to building that?
Oh, sure. Well, Route 40 came through the 7 now, and went past where the racetrack was out there, and went it down, and went right through Main Avenue to Grace Front Street, and then across the bridge. And that was Route 40, that was a long time ago. I don't remember the date, but see when he went down that, and they built the bridge. They made that 7, but it was only a 1 way of getting down to Happy Grace down the middle. See, it still runs up through here and went over the road. And it still is. Yeah, I remember. I remember when they double-decked the bridge, too. My father worked on that. See, it was a single, that was one first before the other bridge was built. It was a toll bridge. And you had to pay even to get a traffic crossing. You had to pay. So that was there for quite a long time. And then they made a double decker out of it. Go one way and come back the other. And it was still a safe building. And at that time, they made it through that you could walk across it or whatever.
Well, did that get torn down after the Route 40 bridge was built? Is
yes.
That when they tore that down?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The piles are still there, but they tore the bridge down. And of course, it was for two.
Yeah.
It's a big one there.
And you would pick that bridge up down at the bottom of Juniata? Is that where that would have, that, the double-decker bridge, where would you have gotten on that?
No, right down the end of this street.
End of this street here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is
Otsego
Street.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very good. Well, speaking of water and so forth, do you remember when the steamboats ran here to Baltimore?
Yeah, we had excursions. We could go on some excursions when we were young. It came out of Baltimore. There was the Susquehanna, the Louise, and anyhow, they come up from Norimer, and they drove goods from Norimer to Havre de Grace during the day, and they'd take stuff back, and whatever people wanted to send to Norimer or down that way. And they done that for a long time. Then they put on excursions. They come up and take you to Tolchester or Butterton. They were two recreational areas. One of them was Tolchester. It was a pretty nice place. It was longer and it cost more to go down there. I don't know right on, but I think it was 50 cents a round trip. Butterton was not much. It was, I think it was 30 or 35. Anyhow, they had sometimes they would have it during the day, and sometimes they'd have excursions and moonlight excursions. And of course, we liked those. They'd have a little orchestra on that. They could dance and whatever. And then when you got down there, they had all kinds of rides and stuff. Both of them. Butterton and Colchester. And that was our thing to do. Especially young ones, like myself and my wife. We danced and it was good. Very nice.
Do you remember how many years that was in operation in your life?
Well, it started when we were real young. That was one of the things that there was a railroad took things, and you could go to Baltimore or Philadelphia or whatever, but it was pretty expensive. Boats were much cheaper, and they these boats that come up and brought people, I could order wallpaper, as they say, for instance. I never got paint, but I got wallpaper from Baltimore, and they'd bring it up, and I'd meet the boat, and I'd get out there and get it.
That's it.
They done that. Anything you wanted to get out of Burma, they'd bring up to you. You had to pay the freight on, that's where they made their money. And they would do it here. This boat really wasn't the only place. It went as far as Porto Pazzi up on the other side. And they take farmers with quarter stuff, and they'd bring, after stopping here, they'd go up there and let that out, then they'd come back and stop at Applegate's. Either go back or else go on an excursion in the evening. See, that didn't happen on this side of the river at all. This is, folks came only to Havre de Grace. They didn't go to Porto Pazzi on the other side, that's Sicily County.
Very good. You had mentioned before about the Susquehanna and Tidewater Canal, and you knew it went to Wrightsville. Do you remember any stories when you were young child hearing about the canal?
Seeing them, and we used to meet them when they come down. They'd bring coal. These boats wasn't real big, but they were open boats, and I would say they're about 20 foot wide, and they hauled passengers too. But mostly that what they brought down was coal. And the people would come here to Havre de Grace to pick up the coal and take it to different places around Harper and Sicily County.
Did you, where the lock house is now, where they made the museum out of it, do you remember?
Well, that's where the end of the canal was, and they had that was pretty good size. It's still there. They use it, I guess it's what you call it, a lock house now, because it has the rooms and everything. It's a 2.5-story building, brick, and people that come down, if they want to stay a night, they can stay right there at the lock house. Where they could come into town and get into a hotel and so forth. You know, in those days, whiskey was a big thing. They had a terrible time of beer and oil. And everything was whiskey. And Hendrick Sold and all the targets and places like that. They took back things up, like to the farmers up in the area, up above Wrightsville. Wrightsville was, I don't know exactly how far it is from Halbergrace, like Wrightsville, but I would say it was about 25 miles. And then they would have a place there, and where there's a junction, they'd turn around and come back in the canal. And there was a canal at one time on this side of the river. And then, you know, it didn't do so good. It would just call people, and I think it did bring some coal back, but it didn't last very long.
That was in Cecil County, is that where?
Cecil County was the one that had the real canal. This is Harford County.
Okay.
And it didn't do so well. They used to be individual boats that wanted to do it, but they had to row. And another way of doing it was they rowed up, but they could come back. You come back, see what happened when the Susquehanna River let water into the canal, that would bring it back. You didn't have to, just steer the thing, keep it in the middle of the canal. But going up, you had to row the only way you could get there.
Do you remember when the Concord Point Lighthouse was operating?
Yeah.
What do you recall about that?
Well, we never thought too much of it, but it was there, and we used to use it. Like when we went on those excursions, those boats, they used the canal to guide them up to Chesapeake Bay. Otherwise, they'd run aground. But on both sides of the river, there were flats. That's where they used to go. There was an eastern flat and a western flat on this side. And they were, at times you could stand up to here, so all the water would be on the flats.
That'd be up to your waist, or up to your knees, or somewhere in that area.
Yeah, I've been out there, I've gone back there, I've done duck hunting out there. It was better on the eastern side than it was over on this side, because this side was full of grass. And that's what some of the ducks wanted. At that time, they had a grass that they eat on. They fed it. They pulled it right up and chewed it up. But then there was a time that came, I can't remember the date, of when they had real high water in the Susquehanna River, and an awful lot of snow and ice. And this all stuff come down one spring and took that grass out. Just pulled it out and took it right on down the bay. And after that, you see the ducks didn't come back anymore. They got the food to eat. That was the end of the duck season. And still is. It isn't any good grass out there now.
We'll come back to that duck hunting in just a minute, because I know you know a lot about that. But before I do, speaking of the river, did you notice any changes in the river when the Conowingo Dam was constructed?
Oh, yeah. You didn't get control of a bunch of water. They control what water goes through the dam. Yes, it made a big difference. Even to the fish and netting. See, this ran Harford and Cecil County back before the dam. Fishing was a big thing. They used all kinds of different kinds of nets, and they sold like I was telling you about these boats taken back. They shipped fish down the bottom of them. I think it was one of them went to Philadelphia, and it made a big difference because the fish come up here to spawn. They still do, but not like they did before the dam was.
What kind of fish did you see in abundance up here?
Herring and shad were the big ones. They sell herring for $1 a piece. And a lot of people came down from up like Lancaster, way up that way, and they bought some that they wanted for themselves for the salt pan or pickle or whatever they done with it. The rest of them they put on the ground. When they planted the corn, they put one fish and he's here. And they thought, they come up with these, what they call this, Saratoga wagons. Great big wagon with six horses. And they pile that thing full of herring and take it back up. And that's what they use. But the shad was good for eating. They done good on shad. It came up to spawn up there too. And people, most everybody, put up shad for the winter. And we did too.
Speaking of winter, what did you do to keep things refrigerated?
You haven't. We have vendors. I have no refrigerator in wintertime. We just keep it in. We had a shed here where this is now. This is, I built this on later years. But we had a shed here, a pretty good sized shed on both sides. And you packed the fish and salt, and you ate them. You put them in cold water like today, and you can eat them tomorrow to soak the salt out of them. That's the way they kept the shad. And almost everybody put down shad. Some did herring, but they kept all right, but they were really boaty.
How about during the summertime, though, your other foods? How did you keep them cold? Did you have an ice house or something?
Big garden.
Just fresh foods, primarily.
Yeah, other than that, well, see, we could make out pretty good, because most all of us, like I said before, we quit school and got to work again. We could buy. We always had a, we called the book with the store over here, Claire's, and then they get paid, they pay them. That's what we're really all about to. We had to work all the time. We don't must mess around.
Going back to the river for just a moment more, do you remember the winters seeing it frozen over?
Oh, yeah.
Was that a regular thing? Or?
Oh, yeah. The sea was open, no dam there. And it froze over every winter. Some winters were real bad. You might have 2 foot of ice. And they cut ice and stacked it in ice houses down here right along the river. There was 2 big ones on this side of the river and 1 big one over in Cecil County on the other side. And they had horses and mules that were grabbed on the ice, and they pulled a thing that would mark the ice. Then they had people come along and saw the ice by hand. And then they had a conveyor, they put it on this conveyor and took it and put it up in the ice house. And they used straw and mostly straw that covered so it keep it from melting. And they stack it clean up high. And then they put it on wagons to people when it come summertime, they had these wagons come around and you bought the ice off an ice wagon.
Mm-hmm. And that's what people would kind of use to keep things cool.
A piece like this, for this 10 cents. Mm-hmm. And we had to take a piece every day.
Mm-hmm. So he had to come every day?
Oh, they do, yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever see any?
A lot of that ice went in the bottom.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Did you ever see any floods on the river?
I have. I've seen them come up down here to the end of this street. And you see, that was before the dam, and you couldn't do nothing about it. You know, so the way see the tide comes in twice a day here. And the tide would hold the water in that was coming down the river. And then they flooded up around all these small towns at high water. That's what we call it. Up on this side, up here, the ways. And some of those towns even had to move out of their houses because there's hills up both sides of this river. And you get so that the water backs up. Some of them had to get out of their houses to the flood water. eased on down into the bay. Lots of times. I've seen high water.
Please turn the tape over to the other side. This is Mr. Forsyth, and this is side two. Mr. Forsyth, you were talking about the floods and the high waters and so forth. Do you recall the last major flood that you would have seen?
Well, after the dam, of course, you didn't have to go down on the river bank. I've seen it go over top of the dam, and that dam is 60 foot high. And I sure tell you how much water is back sucked. But that would flood a lot of people up along the way that lived down close to the river. A lot of them had to lose their homes because they had to get out of them because of the high water.
Very much so, and it could do a lot of destruction today, couldn't it, if the dam ever broke loose?
Oh, would it?
Imagine what that would do. You were talking about the commercial fishing, but I want to talk next about duck hunting, because I know that's something you did, and it was a big industry here in Havre de Grace, too, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, way when I was young, with duck hunting, we didn't have any money to duck the way they done that on what they call the flats, the Susquehanna flats. But we used to help these people that they'd come down here from Philadelphia to New York, and they'd get guides that would take these people out there and show them where the best places were to shoot, and they had to come down here at 4 o'clock in the morning, be here, train going down, and they had these guides would catch them over here at the station and take them down and put them on their boats and take them out into the flats and get up so when daybreak they'd be ready to shoot. But what us guys used to do when they 12 years old and long in there, we'd help them carry their bags from when they got down, come back and bring up to the station. So they put them on the trains and take them back. And they used to tip us whatever it was, a dollar or whatever. And they done that for a long time. But then, and that was a big thing for people at that time, and they got all just about all with it. They had a date, but I think they started in about October and run into February, and ducking was over. But then, when the dam was built, that was changed because it was a control thing, and you could only shoot at certain times. They didn't have a long, what they called a season at that time. They had a spring and fall shoot, but when the dam comes through, they cut it out and just had a spring shoot. And they get ducks, but I did say that at that time when that water went through and took the grass out, it killed it. The geese started cutting, and ducks, but there wasn't many geese at that time. There's a lot of ducks, the good ducks, canvasbacks, and there was food for them to eat, so they went to another area. And that almost knocked the duck season out. It was fair, but nothing like it was when they could go on the flats, that's what they called it.
Did you see a lot of people during that duck season coming into town? I mean, lots of
families. Oh, yeah.
They
came by train.
By train?
Yeah.
I understood some famous people even had come in here. Do you recall any of that?
I saw Jack Dempsey one time selling papers out the racetrack. There was a racetrack running in. And they run in the spring and the fall. And 10 days one time, I think a little over 2 weeks. Spring was a big time, but they had the people that came here and went out on the flats. And Yeah, it was a big thing. It seemed that people had never had an automobile of any kind, they made a taxi out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to stop here at first, when I was young, really young. And they had to have somebody take them out to the racetrack, which was about 2.5 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So they had taxis, and that's what they done. And then after the races, they were over, I'd pick them up again, bring them back to the train to take them to Florida or Philadelphia. And we used to sell sandwiches out there, and apples or whatever.
I want to come back to that race, Havre Grace racetrack in just a minute, but let me ask you this. Do you ever recall seeing sink boxes being used? Duck
boxes? We use sink boxes.
Can you describe a little bit for people what that is?
Well, I'd say it's about, not quite as wide as this room. I'd say it's about from here to that door.
10 feet, maybe?
Yeah. A sink box, you'd only use two people. And it was approximately 3 foot wide and 10 foot long. And it was only, this is what they used out on the flats. You couldn't use it too good on whether it was deep water. They usually get flipped over one limb, you drown with all your heavy clothes that you use in that cold weather, and your gun and all that equipment. And they've had people to drown out there. But with this sink box, you could use this, and what they do, they have another boat, their main boat, they tow the sink box out and anchor it where they want it in the flats. And two people would get in it. Well, the other, there was four people. The other two people took the boat and go way off someplace and hide and float ashore so the ducks wouldn't see it. And they would take turns of those people shooting, and they'd take in and with the ducks, and the others would go out and they would shoot. And they would get there, say for instance, maybe 2 hours at a time. And they kill ducks by the hundreds.
I understand they used to use some unusual guns, too, every once in a while, like almost like a cannon.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that?
Yeah. They got them down here in the museum. Let's see, down here they got a decoy museum down here. There's a butt gun. That's what they call it. And they use heavy gauge shells. You don't use it in a regular gun. You don't take it. But they shoot with this big load of powder and shot. They use anything, nails, anything that's armed with the shot. And they would shoot them, they'd wait until a large amount of ducks come in. Sometimes they even shot them while they were sitting on the water. It wasn't illegal then. They changed that altogether. You couldn't shoot them, you had to shoot them in the air. But then they'd go down or go around with them, round up their decoys, their ducks, and they'd bring them back and take them over to that other boat, another bunch come out. And they do the same thing. But they were in there from about 4 o'clock in the morning to Sunday.
Well,
real cold out there, freezing.
I bet. What do you think, I know you mentioned one of the things was the grasses disappearing caused the decline in these, especially the canvas back duck.
Yeah.
Do you see, or do you think there's any other things that caused them to decline as well?
No, that was it.
That was the major thing?
It took the grass out. And left them in there for the female. There's a little bit of it. It was called rice weed. One of the ones that was good that they liked was the rice weed. And I forget the name of it, another one. And it grew right there on the flats because it was shallow water. So that's why it grew. And then when they put the dam in and had that flood, it took the grass out. It took the end of it. You could go out there and put your decoys out, but you wouldn't do much good.
Well, let's talk a little bit about decoys.
You also could do it in the Northeast River. See, it's just off from the Susquehanna River in Chesapeake Bay, right down here at the end of Havre de Grace. It goes up to Northeast Maryland, and that's where I got more or less the Northeast River. They had a channel that when it came off the bay, it came on the far side of the Northeast River, and there was a channel that you could take it right on up the Northeast River. And off of that, it was shallow water. I bought a cottage over there, and I used to take the go over and have my decoys, and we put the decoys out about maybe 200 or 300 yards away from where the cottages were, and we'd go right over there, and it was much easier and a lot warmer and easy to get to. I had a boat that you could scull, it's called sculling boat, and that's what I used. And we camouflage it with weeds and everything all the way around it, and put our decoys out, and then when they come in, we shoot them. And I got out on the flats, but I done better on the Northeast River. I was a goose hunter.
Is that right?
Yeah, I could do it too.
Well, you talk.
I had to have decoys for them too.
Well, where'd you get your decoys?
We made them.
You made them yourself?
We made them, yeah. And then instead of putting that, we could use them in the water, but we done better on ground. And I have a cottage over there, like I was saying, and I just go over there and we put our decoys out in the field. And where they had corn, and they had cut the corn, and some of the grains that fell on the ground, and this is what brought the geese in. And we done good at decoysing.
Are you kind of amazed when you look at the decoys today and how popular they've become as an art form? Are you kind of amazed at that, knowing how you made your own, you used them to hunt with?
Oh, yeah.
Did you know Madison Mitchell? And
very good. Yeah, I worked for it for a while.
Did you?
What we done in spare time was make heads and put them on the sander. They'd make a stool first so big, just the size of a duck. Mostly see what they were trying to get his canvas back. They're about that big.
I'll get you. So you say Bob McGraw?
Robert McGraw.
Robert McGraw.
He was, Addison Mitchell learned from him. He was one of the best in Harvard Grace, so, or around this area anyway. And I went down there one day and I was looking for some finished decoys. I was going to buy some, and he says, I got 22 over there on the shelf, and they wasn't painted. So he says, I'll sell you them for $1 a piece. So Madison Mitchell painted them, that's one of them.
Well, that's quite something, and I notice you have a poster on your wall over there of the decoy makers of the Susquehanna Flats.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
It is, and I see you've got Madison Mitchell's signature on the...
Yeah.
Do you do anything with decoys now?
I don't.
No.
Yeah. I can't do that. I got my guy over right next to it, Tommy Jones, makes decoys.
There's a lot of well-known decoy makers in this area, isn't
there? Well, they're fading away. Most of them have passed on. But they don't make decoys like they used to, because there's not that many young ones coming up that are gunning. It takes a lot with your boat and your rig and everything. And lots of times you have to even pay. When we're goose hunting, we have to pay for a pit. What we do on a goose hunt, you get down the ground, you dig a pit, and then you put your decoys out, and everything's camouflaged. But you have to pay for it. We pay $400 for a pit for a season. Well, for four of us, $100 a piece. Besides all your decoys, your guns, and your shells, and everything, it was really pretty expensive. And now you have to go all the way down the Eastern Shore before you can get any gun.
Now I want to hear a little bit about the Happy Grace Racetrack too.
Well, Happy Grace Racetrack was a big thing for Happy Grace because they had people came here, stayed, they rented rooms, they had to eat and whatever, all everything, and they, a lot of them stayed. They come, we used to, my mother used to rent a couple of rooms, and they made some money out of it, and helped Happy Grace in more ways, like I said, with the taxi cabs, the restrooms, and when those guys come in, they want to gamble. They have gambling places all in and around Happy Grace, especially down on the front street. They could just go to the racetrack, and in the evenings they'd gamble. Like,
what kind of gambling did you say?
Cards, shooting crap, anything
whatever.
I could think of.
You'd mentioned too that you had seen Jack Dempsey at the racetrack.
Yeah, I saw him going in the racetrack one time. I was selling papers at the time. We used to sell papers. Got our papers from off the train, came up from Baltimore, and we'd take them out there some. And they must always give you a tip. It was good. Yeah.
Did you get to sell him a paper, or just got to see him as he went by?
Just when he went by. Wow. I was too young to get to drive. Too expensive too. Couldn't afford it. They had to get a big crowd, 20,000 people.
Is that right?
Yeah. Place was so loaded with people everywhere.
Now that racetrack today is where? Where would that
just
have been?
Just to continue it all together.
Right, but what's in its place today?
National Guard.
Okay.
They bought it.
Okay. And
had a big grandstand right there. And they bought the ground and sand and everything, National Guard. That's where they train these local people.
Do you remember when the racetrack actually stopped operating?
Oh. No, I don't.
Okay, that's all right. Well,
'30s, '40s. Yes, I do. It was right after the war. They didn't open it anymore.
After the Second World War.
Yeah, they closed it during the war. They wouldn't let them open it anymore. Probably 1940.
Very good. I'm going to ask you a really different question now, Mr. Forsyth. What changes would you like to see in Haverty Grace and Harford County for the future?
Well, Haverty Grace has got no place to go down the rivers right there from one end to the other. The only way it can go is up this way. And it is building new houses, quite a lot of them. Happy Grace is going to annex a good bit of ground, property, from old Route 40 clean up to this 155 that goes like the Royal Farms down to building houses. So they can go this way, and they are expanding, yes.
And you want to see the town expand?
Well, yeah, it's a never heard of thing. They're all nice, all new houses. They like old houses, all down here, all old houses. And they get good roads and everything. No reason why it shouldn't expand. Aberdeen is, which, you know where Aberdeen is?
Yes.
It's expanding much more than the Abjurkos, and they're doing great. So this might well expand too. But a proving ground has a lot to do with it. People come here and they get a job and they stay. And they sell places, buy places. They still have to, if they get anything, they have to go down to Main Street downtown. And nothing up around here is like stores. Well, there is a few now since they put this city.
Well, Mr. Forsyth, what important things have we left out that would be interesting for us to know? Did I leave out something that should I ask you about?
Well, one thing I'll tell you, just like I told those people was, when I had that thing going on with the City Hall, I think Happy Grace is a nice place to live. If you can get a good job, it's a good place for that also. But they have put some, there is a place out here where the racetrack used to be around there over a good ways back, as we talked about, that it's a commercial place that they're building, factories and different things, and it is drawing some people around. It is expanding, and they got the water. The people who had a boat, if they want to go fishing or sailing or whatever, and they got three big marinas here in Harvey Grace. One down the yacht basin belongs to the city of Harvey Grace. It's a wonderful, beautiful place. And they got one right down here at the end of this street, and they got one up for them. And it's a good place to live. You can get by if people's got cars. You want to go to different places and things to do. But I don't know about the young people. It's pretty hard for me to say. I have grandchildren and great-grandchildren. But they seem to make out fairly different, but the Aberdeen Proving Ground is a big thing for people who live. Otherwise, I don't think you would dry up, probably. You come right down to it.
How many children do you have?
I have two. My daughter, you just saw, Rebecca. I have a son that sent me. 10 years different between my daughter and my son. My son, he went to college, Salisbury was college, and he got a job in Baltimore County after what I was a school teacher. And he stayed at it for quite a while, and finally, with my help, he got a job as in the office. And he worked his way up. He retired with a very good retirement, and he done very well. And he has two children, one of those dies, and one of them lives in Minnesota. But they both had children, and two. And very nice. He lives in my cottage over in Charleston now. I let him stay there. I don't use it anymore. Too old for it. She don't care much. And my daughter, my wife died in 1999. And since then, I've lost interest in the cottage. We used to go there. Summertime, we went over almost every weekend with a bunch of people. And we'd have picnics and crab feasts and everything like that. And we had a wonderful time. And she died at a kind of little citrus in the cottage. And my son and his wife is living in it. And they think it's great, which it is. It's right on the Northeast River. Walk down the steps and we're right in the water. And he likes it very much over there. And for me, I've seen my time, I've had it. I've already deeded to him, so he might as well live in it. And my daughter, I've deeded this house to her, and she and her husband is taking care of me here. When I go, she will have this. That's from the next two.
Well, Mr. Forsyth, thank you very much for sharing your memories.
You're right.
Of Avery Grace.
I didn't mind it at all.
Well, I think it's very interesting, and I know a lot of people are going to
I've had a lot of experiences in my time. And they all come out of Avery Grace. That's what it is, all the night.